Okay. So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth canto, first chapter, text 48. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Manasaiva.
Manasaiva.
Do you have it written up there? Or? It's not written. Anyway, people have their own devices now. Pure Devaha
Purva
Rupam
Vipashyati
Anumimamsate
Purvam
Manasa
Bhagavan
Ajaha Manasaiva Pure Deva
Manasaiva Pure Deva
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Anumi Mamsate Purvam
Anumi Mamsate Purvam
Manasa Bhagavan Achaka
Manasa Bhagavan Achaka
Saiva Pure Deva
Saiva Pure Deva
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Anumimamsate Purva
Anumimamsate Purva
Manasa Bhagavan Achaka
Manasa Bhagavan Achaka
Saiva Pure Deva
Saiva Pure Deva
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Anumimam Sate Purva
Anumimam Sate Purva
Manasa Bhagavan Achaka
Manasa Bhagavan Achaka
Manasaiva Pure Deva
Manasaiva Pure Deva
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Anumimam Sate Purvam
Anumimam Sate Purvam
Manasa Bhagavan Ajaha
Manasa Bhagavan Ajaha
Manasaiva Pure Deva
Manasaiva Pure Deva Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Anumi
Mamsate Purvam
Manasa Bhagavan Ajaha
Manasa Bhagavan Ajaha
Manasaiva Pure Deva
Manasaiva Pure Deva
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Purva Rupam Vipashyati
Mamsate Purvam
Anumi Mamsate Purvam
Manasa Bhagavan Ajaha
Manasa Bhagavan Ajaha
Okay, no one else? Ladies? Anyone? No? Everyone's shy here. Manasa
Manasa
By the mind
By the mind
Eva
Eva
Indeed
Indeed
Pure,
Pure,
in his abode, or within everyone's heart, like the supersoul,
Devaha,
the demigod Yamaraja. And there's more to the translation of this word. Jivatiti Deva, one who is always brilliant, and illuminated is called Deva. Purva Rupam,
the past religious,
or irreligious condition,
Vipashyati,
completely observes.
Completely observes.
Anumimam sate.
Anumimam sate.
He considers.
He considers.
Apurvam.
Apurvam.
The future condition.
The future condition.
Manasa.
Manasa.
With his mind.
With his mind.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
Who is omnipotent.
Who is omnipotent.
Ajaha,
Ajaha,
as good as Lord Brahma.
As good as Lord Brahma.
So, Krishna. Getting scared of Yamaraj already. So translation, the omnipotent Yamaraj is as good as Lord Brahma, for while situated in his own abode or in everyone's heart like the Paramatma, he mentally observes the past activities of a living entity and thus understands how the living entity will act in future lives. So you can repeat. The omnipotent Yamaraj.
The omnipotent Yamaraj.
That word means all powerful. Is as good as Lord Brahma.
Is as good as Lord Brahma.
For while situated in his own abode.
For while situated in his own abode.
Or in everyone's heart.
Or in everyone's heart.
Like the Paramatma.
Like the Paramatma.
He mentally observes.
He mentally observes.
The past activities,
the past activities
of a living entity,
of a living entity,
and thus understands how,
and thus understands how
the living entity will act,
the living entity will act
in future lives,
in the future lives.
So purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So one should not consider Yamaraj an ordinary living being. He is as good as Lord Brahma. He has the complete cooperation of the Supreme Lord who is situated in everyone's heart. Let me repeat that sentence because it's really important to understand what's being discussed here. Because previously, we read the translation, it appears like Yamaraj is situated in your heart, right? But Prabhupada really explains it in this particular sentence. He has the complete cooperation of the Supreme Lord who is situated in everyone's heart. And we're going to use this to talk about the omniscience and omnipotency of pure devotees. So anyway, and therefore by the grace of the super soul, he can see the past, present, and future of a living being from within. The word anumimamsate means he can decide in consultation with the super soul. Actually, this mimamsa means to think very deeply. It's one of the darshans, you know, the Vedic darshans, mimamsa. Anyway, like karma mimamsa, udra mimamsa, he's thinking very, very deeply. Means that he can decide in consultation with the super soul. There's that super soul again. Anu means following. The actual decisions concerning the next lives of the living entities are made by the super soul. Interesting.
Yeah.
Not by Yamaraj. And they are carried out by Yamaraj. So again, I'll read the verse. Manasaiva puri deva purva rupam vipashyati anumimamsate purvam manasa bhagavan ajaha. So omagana tibhidanda shaganjana shvakaya chakshuram nidikam yena tasmai shigurveya maha. So two things that I'm going to discuss here is Yamaraj's punishments and rewards, and then Yamaraj's what we call ontological position. You know, who is he? What is his power? What does it mean by him being omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, etc., like that, which appear to be the qualities of God. So first of all, let's talk about a little story about Yamaraj that illustrates his particular responsibility, and that's the story of Jagai and Madai. I'm sure many of you heard that story before. Obviously, if you're Hare Krishna devotees, you've obviously heard the story. So, Jagai and Madai were two Brahmins who took up some bad association. And we see throughout the Vedic descriptions of many good people becoming contaminated by bad association. Even Krishna's own son, who was born from the earth, Boma had bad association and he became a demon. Krishna had to kill him. Even Lord Ramchandra's associates, two of the gorillas, Dvidvida and Mainda, who were serving Lord Ram in bringing back Sita, they had to be killed by Balaram, simply by bad association. And even in the Mahabharata, we find that grandfather Bhishma had bad association in that he ate food cooked in Duryodhana's kitchen, as Srila Prabhupada says. And so he acted irreligiously, even though he is a Mahajan, like Yamaraj. He's one of the Dwadasa Mahajans. So you find this principle of association very important. So Jagai and Madai, who were previously known as Jagadananda and Madhavananda, they changed their spiritual names into material names. That was their material initiation. So they were doing so many sinful activities, illicit sex, intoxication. I don't think they ate meat, but just about everything else. And then they had that whole encounter with Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda, we know the story, eventually forgave them after Madai hit Lord Nityananda in the head, and then Lord Chaitanya was getting ready to kill Madai and Jagat. Then we find in that particular story, I believe it's the Chaitanya Mangal, where Yamaraj and his associates are watching this whole encounter and how Jagat and Madai were forgiven. We find Yamaraj actually fainting and in disbelief at how merciful Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are. And then we also find the description given by Yamaraj that Jagai and Madai, or Jagadananda, Madhavananda, who became rectified, had so many sinful activities, and those sinful activities were noted down by Yamaraj's scribe. It appears that he has a computer operator known as Chitragupta, who actually writes down everything you do in your life. Have you been naughty? Have you been nice? The perverted reflection of that, of course, is in the Western understanding of Santa Claus. You've all heard of Santa Claus before. There's this song we have, I don't know if you have it in Finland, you better be careful, better watch out, because he knows when you've been naughty, he knows when you've been nice. And if you're not nice, you won't get any presents. So Chitragupta is actually taking notes the whole time. And it's described that Jagai and Madai's notebook, or a bunch of notebooks, are so heavy, there's so many of them, that they couldn't even fill a bottomless pit. The description is there. And they were saved by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. It's pretty wonderful. So Yamaraj is actually the judge who takes this information into account. But he doesn't take or judge devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are judged by Krishna directly, or Krishna's devotees, other devotees. But they're not under the jurisdiction of the law of karma. So many times devotees talk about karma and how karma is impeding their devotion, or their some skaras are impeding their devotional service. But devotional service is transcendental, as mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Ahaitukiya pratyata yatma supersedate savayapum sam parodharma yato bhakti hoksaje ahaitukiya pratyata yatma supersedate, that there is no material impediment to devotional service. And of course, pure devotional service is not caused by any material cause. That's pure devotional service. So, and also we know from the Harinam Chintamani that even Nama Bas chanting gets rid of all of your karma. You know, even if you chant as described in the Harinam Chintamani by Haridas Thakur, even if you're being followed by a big pig, like it's a boar, and you're chanting, if you're a Muslim, chanting, Ha Ram, Horom, horom. That means horrible in the Arabic language. Horom, horom. Then you're getting liberated. There's no more karma, and you're not under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. So, anyway, so we do not worry about karma. And actually, Prabhupada said, one time he said, actually, when you chant and dance for the deities and clap your hands, then all the lines on your hands change. In other words, your karma changes. And I practically observed it. I look at my two hands, you know, the left hand and the right hand are completely different. And for the ladies, it's the opposite, in case you're interested in palmistry. Then your right hand is what you're born with, the left hand is what you make of it, and with the men, it's the left hand is what you're born with, and the right hand is what you make of it. Got it? Don't worry, I'm not going to read your palms today. So by taking up devotional service, we don't really have to worry about what happened in the past. And in fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this, is don't dwell in the past, don't dwell in the future, just do what's necessary now for serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So that's Yamaraj's duty. And it's a thankless task. He also awards people, too. There's an interesting story in the Ramayana, the Valmiki Ramayana, how Ravan tried to free some of Yamaraj's people from their punishments. Ravan wanted to challenge Yamaraj because he thought that if he could claim that he has defeated death, or death personified, who is Yamaraj, that he could brag about it everywhere. And Ravana liked to brag, so he went to Yamaloka, and he saw all these suffering souls being harassed by Yamaraj, or Yamaraj's assistants, the Yamadutas, and he freed them for some time, and they were actually worshiping him. Oh, you're so nice, you're our savior. And then he actually directly confronted Yamaraj, and Yamaraj and he were having a fight, and Yamaraj pulled out the Yama Danda, the ultimate weapon that can kill anybody. And then Lord Brahma spoke, and he said, don't kill him with this Yama Danda, because I promise that he will not die being killed by a demigod, and you're one of the demigods. So, anyway, so as far as the description here, I found it quite interesting in this verse of Yamaraj's omnipotency omniscience, omnipotency. So his omniscience and omnipotency is dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul. That is his perfection. So let's relate this to the position of a pure devotee, like His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, or Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or other great pure devotees, or even, of course, Prabhupada is a Shaktivesh avatar. So we oftentimes think that they are omnipotent or omniscient in the same way that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. And Prabhupada answers this in a very interesting way when the devotees ask him if he knows everything or he's aware of everything. And Prabhupada answers by saying that this means that he knows Krishna, and Krishna lets him know what he needs to know. This is an interesting statement, because we sometimes talk about the perfection of a pure devotee. The perfection of a pure devotee is that he's purely devoted to Krishna, and therefore he doesn't make any mistakes, because each and every action of his is an act of devotion, a relationship to Krishna. That is the position of the pure devotee. So we sometimes misunderstand thinking or getting confused. Let's say if you're in a car with a pure devotee and the pure devotee says, I think you should turn this way, and you know it's the other way, and you turn the way he tells you when going down the wrong way in a one-way street, and you get in an accident, you say, I thought he was omniscient. But he's not. He's a jiva soul. A jiva soul can never, never, never be equal to Vishnu. Even at the stage of perfection, the jiva soul is dependent on Vishnu, is dependent on Krishna. That is his perfection. Yasmin vigate sarvamevam vigatam bhavati. Actually, one who knows Krishna, in one sense, knows everything. He may not know how to fix a car. He may not know how to fix your computer. Just like the other day, my computer webcam went bad. I didn't know what the problem is, even though I'm supposed to be a guru. And I know Krishna. But at least he knows the purpose of everything, what everything is meant for, what the purpose of human life is. So this is the perfection of pure devotee. So therefore, one should not get confused when they see different pure devotees, like you have different disciplic successions, or even within our disciplic succession, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, Madhva Gaudiya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, with different instructions or injunctions for their followers that appear to be really different, I mean, dramatically different. For example, we've been talking about this in regard to the Gayatri mantras, because there's some controversy and there's been many papers written about the Gayatri mantras, why we chant the Gayatri mantras, who should chant the Gayatri mantras. And in some acharyas will only give the Gayatri mantras to those who they consider to be Brahmins or work in a Brahminical occupation. And that means they don't have a job on the outside. And some acharyas will give 9 or 10 or even 16 Gayatri mantras. Some acharyas will not give the Brahma Gayatri. Some of you have taken second initiation know what I'm talking about. So what's happening here? Who is right and who is wrong? There is no right and wrong. There's application by the acharyas according to time, place, and circumstance. And it is the duty of the devotees in each particular branch of the sampradaya to follow their acharya. And our research, or the research done by our strategic committee on the GBC, shows that when people change the injunctions given by the acharya, they're actually setting up a new branch of the sampradaya. For example, we chant 16 rounds, right? We're supposed to chant 16 rounds. And that's Prabhupada's instruction. And you may find other branches of the Gaudiya Sampradaya where they're chanting, what, 64 rounds or 32 rounds. Or you may find other branches where there's no vow to chant a certain number of rounds. So what's right and what's wrong? It's not that we criticize others. You may find different interpretations of the relationship between Krishna and different residents of Vrindavan and other sampradayas. There's no wrong there. But we have been given Srila Prabhupada's instructions and Srila Prabhupada's guidance in presenting and practicing Krishna consciousness. And so by following Prabhupada, we become followers of Srila Prabhupada. Without following that, if we change something, then we may be followers of a different sampradaya, a different branch of the sampradaya, or followers of our own mind in certain cases. So it's very important to stick with the founder acharya. And nowadays, the reason I'm talking about this is that we've actually found that sometimes devotees, they will change certain things that Srila Prabhupada has given us, thinking that they, in one sense, they may know better than what Srila Prabhupada gave, or the acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. For example, I'll give you one example of a philosophical concept. We know in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Majjhalila, and I forget the exact verse, and in many other places, you know what I'm talking about. He probably knows where I'm going with this one. It's mentioned that Nitya Siddha Krishna praying. I think he's aware of what he's talking about, right? No? You're smiling when I started talking, so it's different. It's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Nitya Siddha Krishna praying, that the living entity, the living entity's Krishna consciousness is inherent. You understand? Inherent means it's there. The opposite of that would be it's inherited. Do you understand the two differences? Inherent means it's there, it simply has to be awakened. And Prabhupada spoke about this many times, and there's many verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam that corroborate or validate this particular point. This is not just my point. And so Prabhupada said that becoming Krishna conscious is like waking up in the morning after you've heard the alarm. When the alarm goes off, hopefully you remember who you are within the next 10 minutes or so. I was speaking about this yesterday to a very nice group of yogis, that sometimes when you travel, you and I travel, and the alarm goes off in the morning, I wake up and I'm in a different place, I just have to remind myself, you know, where the bathroom is, so I don't step off of the balcony, make a terrible mistake. So, in other words, the memory of who I am is already there. It just has to be awakened by the process of waking up. So in the same way, our Krishna consciousness is already there. When you chant, create chaito dharpana marjanam bhavaha mahadvadmi nirapana, you're cleansing the mirror of the mind so that ultimately you're able to see who you are. You remember who you are. It's a process of remembering. It's not an artificial imposition on the mind, as Srila Prabhupada said. I mean, I personally experienced that when I first came to a temple many years ago, 1968, before any of you were hatched. So in 1968, I first came to a temple, and I walked in the temple, and there were people doing things that really were weird. At least from my perspective, they were dancing around a bush and bowing down to a bush and watering a bush. I said, oh my God, is this something from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or something? So going round and round, and then as I was doing it, because you know you have to do what people in the room are doing, or else they think you're weird too. Isn't it? The first time you come to the temple, people bow down and you bow down. You know, I don't know what's going on, but if I don't bow down, I'm going to stick up like a sore thumb. So I bowed down, you know, ran around the bush. But then, as I was going around the bush, Tulsi Devi, obviously, not an ordinary bush. As I was going around the bush, then I just, wow, I've been there before, been there, been doing this before. There was a remembrance there. When I met Prabhupada for the first time, you know, I recognized him immediately. That was 1971. So it was like an awakening. Not something that wasn't there, it was something that was always there in my heart. And it was covered by lust, by anger, by greed, by the three modes of nature, by bad association. So that's Krishna consciousness. So in other words, that's what the Prabhupada says, that's what the Acharyas say. And in order to be successful in Krishna consciousness, to be considered a follower of Srila Prabhupada, one has to accept Srila Prabhupada's understanding. One has to accept Srila Prabhupada's method of presentation and the process of bhakti is given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And it was good enough for Prabhupada. Otherwise, one is exhibiting one's false pride. and it's offensive. So this is a very important point. So therefore, we should not get confused by differences amongst the acharyas. We are followers of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada has been sent by Krishna, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to present Krishna consciousness. And we simply have to follow, and then we get the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, and we can understand Krishna consciousness. So, anyways, these are some of the points I wanted to make about this particular verse. And there's a lot of controversy going on right now amongst several devotees that we're discussing on the GBC, not amongst GBC members, but controversy in ISKCON about these particular subject matters. One is the omniscience of a pure devotee, omnipotence of a pure devotee. Because we see that sometimes Prabhupada would be expressing his opinions about things that weren't absolute. Like Prabhupada said, for example, one time, he said, potatoes are the king of all vegetables. That's Prabhupada's. Prabhupada is a person. He has a right to his opinion. But then, other times, Prabhupada was speaking from the absolute platform. So, like Krishna also has a right to his opinion. He's a person too, right? Isn't Krishna a person? But what Krishna does, everything Krishna does is absolute, obviously. But Krishna is also an individual person. He has his likes and dislikes. So Prabhupada also is an individual person with his likes and dislikes. So anyway, these are some of the things we're discussing now. So any questions or comments about any of these points? Yes, or not?
Maharaj, we've heard that there are personalities called Trikalagya. How it is related to omniscience?
A Trikalagya means that they're in contact with Krishna. Trikalagya means they know time, past, present, and future. And that means they know Krishna, because one who knows Krishna, it's like that verse I just quoted, Yasmin Vigyate Sarvam Evam Vigyatam Bhavati. One who knows Krishna knows everything. So, it's not that a pure devotee can tell you, like if you ask him, who's going to win the next election? You know, he's not like, gypsy with a crystal ball. I mean, you have some gypsies here, you know, looking to the future. He's not omniscient like that. Trikalagya means he knows Krishna. See, it's a really important philosophical point. Otherwise, one can get confused and lose their faith, because if their faith is based on the point that the pure devotee is equal to Vishnu, in terms of his omniscience, then they will actually observe at a certain point that he's not equal to Vishnu in terms of omniscience. And then they will lose faith. So if faith is based upon an improper philosophical understanding, then it'll be a real challenge for a devotee. And I've seen that. I mean, like even Prabhupada talks in the Bhagavatam, how different acharyas have different opinions about certain things in the Bhagavatam. So they're acharyas, they're pure devotees. Prabhupada says, this acharya says this. This acharya said this pastime happened during a different kalpa. What do you do with that? They're both acharyas and both pure devotees. How do you cope with that particular statement? But an acharya never deviates with the siddhanta, with tattva or siddhanta. Tattva or siddhanta. The tattva means basically knowing the relationship, the sambandha, the relationship between the different tattvas. Tattva means like jiva tattva, Vishnu tattva, shakti tattva, like that. Vishnu shakti prabhupta shichakti kitatavara avijikama samgyanya trutir shakti ishate. Knowing the relationship and the identity, what we call the ontological position, which means the identity of the different tattvas. And the pure devotee does not make mistakes in any way. Is not relative when he's talking about ras. Rasa theology. But in other aspects, the pure devotee is allowed to be a person. Right? I mean, otherwise, if you just see a pure devotee make a mistake driving a car or walking down the street in the wrong direction or giving the wrong direction, then you'll get confused. Even such an ordinary thing like that. I mean, I'm not a pure devotee, so I'm not speaking from like my personal experience of realization on that. But I do know that pure devotees are entitled to their opinions about things that are not on the absolute platform. It's controversial. It's controversial, but I think it's important for the devotees to understand that particular philosophical point. So, any other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Raj, for the lecture. I was thinking about association in Grihastha life and how, like, for example, in work situations, you can't always choose your association, and it might be bad association, how to handle with that situation.
How to handle the bad association? Because obviously, if you're working, I'm just reiterating or restating your question. Obviously, you're working or dealing in this world in a practical way, that you may have to associate with people who are not the best association or in different modes of nature. I would say that one should associate in an official capacity, an official way, rather than intimate way. An intimate way means basically revealing your mind in confidence and taking advice, personal advice from such people. But as far as interacting officially in official capacity, there's no danger. I mean, obviously, if you're going to work, you may have to go to a Christmas party at work or something like that, and don't drink the beer. I think it's like, as long as one's intimate or close associates are good association, then it's all right. I wouldn't worry about it. Yes?
How to reconcile the apparent contradiction between Jiva having the free will and Krishna being omniscient, knowing what will happen?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So he's talking about predestination versus free will. So that's an interesting discussion right there. I do not find a contradiction between Krishna knowing how you're going to use your free will and you're using your free will. It doesn't appear to me, it may appear to some people to be a contradiction, but it doesn't to me. We decide, but Krishna knows which way we're going to decide. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's not that Krishna's making us. If Krishna made us decide, and then Krishna can also give us the power to change our fate. Like Prabhupada said, he has created our good fortune. That means in one sense our fate has changed, but then you can ask the question, didn't Krishna understand, knowing the future, the Prabhupada was going to create your good fortune and therefore your fate was going to change? And I would have to say yes. Because if Krishna didn't know something, he would be omniscient in every sense. Does that make sense? It's not that Krishna is making you decide, but he knows how you'll decide. And Krishna is beyond the time factor, too. See, normally when we're thinking... Yeah, we can blow your mind. Normally when we think about things, we think in terms of our own experience of this world and the time factor. Moving... We're always at present, obviously, but we're moving towards the future. But Krishna is beyond time. beyond material time. What does that mean? I mean, if you understand it, let me know. You know, please explain it to me. I mean, I know what it means, the words mean. But like we talked about yesterday about Krishna's nature and the nature of all the expansions of Krishna, the avatars, and incarnations, avatars, whatever, and Vishnu's relationship with Krishna and Krishna's relationship with Kurma and Matsya and Varaha and Lord Ram and Balaram. Are we worshiping many gods? No. What we're doing is worshiping one God who is appearing in unlimited circumstances, manifesting different aspects of his personality and different features in unlimited circumstances, unlimited times, unlimited universes, and all that simultaneous. Can you really grasp that? I can't. I mean, theoretically, yes. But practically what it means, you know, Advaita Chuta Nadi Rananta Rupa Madhyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Chav Vedeshu Durlabhama Durlabhamatma Bhakto Govindamani Purusham Tamaham Vashami. Krishna is one, Advaita. He's infallible, Achuta. Ananta Rupam, he has unlimited forms, unlimited manifestations, but they're all the same person. He's a Advaita. Example Prabhupada gives is that there's a man who goes to the office and he has certain relationships and he looks a certain way. He may wear a tie and a jacket at the office. And then when he comes home, he has different types of relationships, hopefully more intimate relationships at home than he has in the office. Because otherwise his marriage wouldn't work out too well. So, but he's the same person. The dress is different, the appearance is different to a certain extent. Or let's say an actor on a stage. Someone who acts in a movie or on a stage, he changes his whole appearance, but he's the same person. So Krishna in his various pastimes manifests his appearance, different aspects of his personality, but the complete manifestation of God's personality is as Krishna, Krishna and Vrindavan. But it's all simultaneous. He's the ultimate multitasker. You understand? Try doing that. Multitasking like that. So it's inconceivable. A chincha. That's the nature of God. He's a chincha. And he knows what's happening in everyone's heart. He knows everything. He knows what's happening in every atom. How many atoms are there in this room? How many? Do you know? Charlie? You haven't counted yet. Have you? How many cells in the body? Something trillion, like 100 trillion or something. And in each and every cell, there's billions of different actions going on in each and every cell of our body. And Krishna's aware of all that. It's one body. So many bodies, so many atoms, and so many universes. And we think we're important. Isn't it? You know, all this is going on, Krishna's aware, and here we are sitting in a corner of some small universe. You know, we only have four heads on Lord Brahma in our universe. Tiny universe. And we're sitting in one city, in one house, and thinking, you know, oh, I'm Piyo Krishna Maharaj. I'm important. It's not, you know, the whole thing is just so inconceivable. Even one thing that I'm doing right now is studying microbiology. The reason I'm studying microbiology is not that I want to be a doctor, I'm in the wrong occupation. The reason I'm studying microbiology is to put together presentations about how evolution is impossible. You know, material evolution is understood by the Darwinists is impossible, so it's helping me with my preaching. So the more I study about the cell, one cell in the body, human body, the more I become overwhelmed with, let us say, just overwhelmed with understanding, not understanding, but just with God's presence. When I see the complexity, the impossibility of this cell or any aspect of the cell coming about by chance, then it just so much impresses me that I just become overwhelmed. So God is inconceivable. If he was conceivable, he wouldn't be God. But he's lovable, that's the point. And he's lovable as Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the various incarnations. And everyone has a relationship with a particular incarnation, appearance, expansion of the Lord. It was like yesterday, we were speaking to someone who was a devotee of Hayagriva. Hayagriva. You know, the horse-headed incarnation of Krishna. Krishna Prabhupada said Krishna has so many incarnations, he has, or avatars, as there are species of life. That's amazing, isn't it? And actually, if you look at Lord Nrsingadev and Hayagriva, they're not even a species of life. They're a combination of different, so he mixes and matches too. He's very imaginative. Can you imagine that? So that means at least 8,400,000 different species of life type of incarnation for Krishna. Now, what are you going to do if you see a cockroach with a peacock feather on it? You offer obeisances. Right? I mean, what are you going to do? It's inconceivable. All right, good question. So, yes, you have another question. Question.
Thank you for the class. You told that we should remember we have Krishna consciousness inside, we have God for Godhead inside. And my question is, because of the shloka Narpita Chirincharat, Karuna Vatirna Kalu, that Lord Chaitanya brought, and everyone can develop this.
Yes.
But if everyone has already some particular like form, and everyone can develop it, for me it sounds a little contradictory. Maybe you can help me to understand.
Everybody spiritual identity. And it's a question of remembering your spiritual identity. You develop in the sense like, let's say a child, okay. Let's use the example of a little kid. The kid is born with certain genes, you know, genes, DNA, RNA. And so those genes in DNA are predictive of how the child will develop in a certain way. If the child's going to have a certain type of nose, the child's going to have a certain type of ear, eyes, etc., like that. So that's developing, but it's inherent also. And that's just a material, it's a metaphor, a material example that'll help you understand that you can develop something that you are meant to be or that's an inherent part of yourself. Like a seed. Like you plant a seed of an oak tree. The seed is actually potentially that oak tree. It's not potentially a pine tree. You can't take a seed of an oak tree and make a mango tree, especially here in Finland, where it's too cold. But anyway, it can only grow into an oak tree. Does that make sense? And if you're interested in, I have a whole bunch of verses. I can actually find them on my phone. There's a whole bunch of verses. I probably don't have them right here. In the Bhagavatam and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that talk about the inherency of someone's spiritual identity. In other words, it's not given to you. And even if you read the Jiva Dharma by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you'll see that when there's a guru who's dealing with a disciple or two disciples in this particular case who are coming to the realization of their spiritual identity, the guru is simply facilitating that not telling them what their identity is, but recognizing their inherent attraction as they become purified by the process of bhakti. Does that make sense? And if you're interested in a bunch of verses, I think I have them on my phone, but not during the class right now. I can answer that later. I can give you a whole list of verses in the Bhagavatam that say the same thing. So, any other questions? Yes?
Buddha, I wanted to ask, you were talking about the importance of sticking with Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Understanding his opinion.
His opinion, his presentation, his prescription as far as the process of bhakti is concerned, yeah.
So, how do we actually do that? Because it's so easy to, even studying Srila Prabhupada's books and then studying maybe the books of the acharyas and maybe speaking to some other very knowledgeable devotees who speak a little bit, maybe something else, and they say they understand Prabhupada even better, but they...
Well, let's take Prabhupada as he states himself. I mean, what is the question to understand Prabhupada better? Take Prabhupada at his word. When he says something, he means it. It's not that, you know, Prabhupada says something, he doesn't actually mean it, or Prabhupada did something, he didn't mean to do it. It's not that hard to understand Srila Prabhupada. When Prabhupada says something, we take him at his word. You know, and Prabhupada gave us this process of bhakti, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, etc., like that. Then that's the process. If we want to remain followers of Prabhupada, I mean, it's our choice. If someone wants to follow someone else, they should openly declare it and not say that, you know, I'm following Prabhupada and not following Prabhupada simultaneously. You know, following Prabhupada means to follow Prabhupada. It's not that difficult. Someone says, I know Prabhupada better than Prabhupada knew Prabhupada. Better than Prabhupada spoke. You know, I know what Prabhupada said this, but, you know, it's like Prabhupada talking about Dr. Radhakrishna. Specifically in reference to that verse in the Gita, man mana bhava man bhakto. Just think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisances unto me, unless you will come to me without fail. So Prabhupada commented that when Dr. Radhakrishna, who was the previous president of India, not previous to this, but a long time ago, who commented on this verse, Prabhupada, Dr. Radhakrishna said, it's not to the person we should, person Krishna, we should surrender, but to the unborn beginningless within Krishna. So they're actually taking an indirect interpretation of what Krishna said, and according to the Vedic rules of interpretation, you're supposed to take the direct interpretation unless the direct interpretation doesn't make sense. The example given in the Vedas is, let's say if the direct interpretation doesn't make sense, he gives an example of this. If you say, go to so-and-so's house on the river, then the direct interpretation is the house is on the river. Doesn't make sense. So you understand it's on the side of the river, on the bank. So one takes the direct interpretation. So we take the direct interpretation of what Prabhupada said. And then you're a follower of Prabhupada. And someone says, I know better what Prabhupada wanted than what Prabhupada said. Sounds a little weird to me. So, you have a question here.
Yeah. Hare Krishna, thank you for the class.
Hare Krishna, thank you.
It's a question about the text, actually. It's omnipotent, this Yamaraj, it's a little bit understand. He's just connected with the super soul, with the Paramatma, and he knows everything. And what is the process of knowing everything? And he has this Chandragupta who is
right? Typing things down using a computer or something.
What is the process?
What is the process?
Yeah.
Super soul lets him know. I mean, how it happens, whether super soul says to him, hey, Yamaraj, Acharya has done this today, or whether it just reveals in the heart. It's what's happening even in the higher planets or with personalities like Yamaraj and Lord Brahma is inconceivable for us. What to speak of Krishna? how, you know, the mechanism, I don't know. I have to say that I just don't know. He does it though. And this is what Prabhupada says in the purport. He has complete cooperation of the Supreme Lord who is situated in everyone's heart, and therefore by the grace of the super soul, in other words, somehow or other, through some mechanism, the super soul communicates to him about the past, present, and future of the living being from within. Actually, that's the word I missed. Within, it means from within his heart, the super soul is speaking to him. And because he's a pure devotee, he's able to hear directly what the super soul is saying. Whereas ourselves, not being pure devotees, cannot understand what the super soul is saying. We oftentimes think that the super soul is telling us to do something, when in reality he's saying something else, and we're ignoring him. We used the example yesterday in our discussion that sometimes people of certain religions will say, God is in my heart and he's telling me what to do. And so sometimes I ask the person, all right, so why do you drink? And they say, well, God says it's okay. I said, well, God in my heart is saying something different. So let my God in my heart speak to God in your heart and have to work things out. So, yes, therefore we need the guru not only in the heart, that's called Chaita Guru, but we need the external guru or the association of devotees. We're not just talking about Diksha Guru here. We're talking about advanced devotees, Siksha Gurus, who can actually guide us in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada described that, giving the example of a bunch of sticks, he said if one stick is by itself, it's easy to break it. And if you put a bunch of sticks together, like 100 sticks together, you can't break them. So if we stay in the association of devotees and reveal our minds to devotees, then we'll be safe and secure in Krishna consciousness. So then you'll know what Super Soul is saying. So if you have any question, what does Super Soul want me to do? Does Super Soul want me to go on Sangirtan or go to sleep? Then and then you ask the other devotees. Take shelter of the devotees. Does that make sense? Yes?
Okay, well, one small question.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Kachanam.
Hare Krishna. So I have a question about changing things, as you mentioned, towards following Prabhupada. And it's more specific to changing mantras. I'm talking about Tulsi Pranam, because I have like a guide where I learned this line, Vishnu Bhakti Pradadevi, right? And
here we go.
I have heard the devotees saying,
hey, Krishna Bhakti Pradadevi.
Yes, and so I did ask the question, why it is so, maybe I'm
I also got to ask the same question. What? How did it become Krishna Bhakti?
Yeah, they said that Vishnu is Krishna, so we can change it.
No, but it's the way Prabhupada gave the mantra. Actually, I'm really strict, as you can probably tell in my adherence to what Srila Prabhupada did and what the mantras that Srila Prabhupada gave us. So Prabhupada said, and I read it too, and I got it directly from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, Vishnu Bhakti Pradeya Devi Satyavajaya. So that's why I say Vishnu Bhakti. Although in most temples I go to, people repeat it the other way. Mm. Even if I say, you know, Vrindayai Tulsi Devi, and I say Vishnu Bhakti, they always repeat after me, Krishna Bhakti. Like they're correcting me. The reason we say Vishnu Bhakti, because that's the tattva, that's the category. Mm. See, there's a philosophical reason. It's not just that Prabhupada said it. It's actually a philosophical reason, because you're talking about tattva here. You know, it's the Vishnu tattva. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a category called Vishnu Tattva. It's not a category called Krishna Tattva. It's Vishnu Tattva. And Vishnu Tattva means basically God and all his various expansions. It's the technical term. So the reason it says Vishnu Bhakti is because it's Vishnu Tattva. And we may be more intelligent and say Krishna Bhakti, which is not, I mean, in one sense it's not philosophically wrong, but Tulsi Devi is offered to all Vishnu Tattva deities. Does everybody understand that? In that category. Never to Shakti Tattva, never to Jiva Tattva. Not that Guru Maharaj, here's Tulsi Devi. I'm offering Tulsi Devi. If it's offered to Krishna, that's fine. So your point is actually very well taken, and I really appreciate that question. It's something that I've oftentimes thought about.
Thank you.
But I'm not going to go chastising people who say Krishna Bhakti. But it is actually Vishnu Bhakti, and that's the way Prabhupada presented the Sampradaya Vinayi Mantras Te Nishpala Mataha. It's an interesting verse that one has to take the mantra from the Sampradaya. In other words, I cannot, even though there's many bona fide mantras for chanting, if I haven't been given them in my disciplic succession by Srila Prabhupada, by the disciplic succession, then what right do I have to chant them? I'm not initiated in chanting that mantra. I'm initiated in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and, you know, the Gayatri Mantras, and also in Bhagavatam and Tulsi prayers. And of course I can accept the prayers given by the great Acharyas, but if Srila Prabhupada is specifically giving us prayers in a particular form, my personal opinion is it behooves us, out of chastity, Prabhupada, to chant in that particular way. Although I'm not going to criticize someone for doing the other, which I just criticized. Anyway, but I'm not going to directly criticize at that particular moment, which is actually interesting. Thank you for that. That's actually a really good point, and something that I've always wanted to talk about in class and never had the opportunity, but you gave me the opportunity. Because I didn't want to offend anyone, but you gave me the opportunity to offend. Yeah.
I wanted to ask, since we were talking about technologies and how to know things. So I always thought about why Chitragupta is writing, because I heard that it's writing, the phenomena of writing, it's the symptom of degradation of Kali Yuga before. People were just memorizing everything. So why? What does it mean that Chitragupta is writing? Why to go backwards? Or this is just for us?
It may be allegorical. It may be allegorical that, you know, he's just writing in his mind, or I mean, I don't think he's taking a pen and a paper or a computer. Or, you know, or dictating into his cell phone, you know. You know, that Purna has been good today, you know. I think it can be taken, you know, that's called hermeneutics. There's this, which is an interesting subject matter. Hermeneutics means how do you understand certain statements in shastras. Based upon certain, what we call inviolable, things you can't violate, points. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about something called the Dasa Mula, which means, you know, the 10 basic principles of devotional service. And once you have a foundation like that, you know, your mula, the roots or basic points, you can try to understand shastra, and many times different statements in shastra are metaphorical. For example, the Paranjana story in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is obviously a metaphorical story. and you understand it like that. So, therefore, yes, so it's a science of hermeneutics, of understanding things, and you have certain hermeneutical tools. And in ISKCON, we do that with Srila Prabhupada's statements, which are our Prabhupada's position, Prabhupada's statements, were hermeneutical tools. And then also, you have observable phenomena, which is another source of evidence. So anyway, it's a little complicated. So, yeah, I do not think he's writing with a pen and paper. And I do not think he's using an Apple computer. I rather think he would use a Microsoft.
MS Word 98.
98? No.
Yeah.
It's a little old. It's a little old. But, you know, somehow or other, it's being noted down. That's the principle. It's being noted down, everything, you know, there's a book. You know, metaphorically, there's a book about each and every one of us. And when you chant Hare Krishna, you erase all the pages. And then Krishna has his book. The Prabhupada actually said that, Krishna has his book. And Krishna's aware of everything you do. And you can't hide from Krishna. You can't go into your closet, lock the door, and then Krishna's not watching you. It's enough to make you paranoid, isn't it? That everything I do, every website I visit, every soccer game I go to, good soccer games, no. Every time I get angry, Krishna is watching. It's pretty embarrassing. So, any other questions? Any of the ladies have questions? Yes.
I want to ask about that computer you were talking. I have quite loud voice.
Hare Krishna. May I ask something about that computer thing you
yeah.
were asking? So, which recording everything. So, how about if about past life? Is it the record carried about past life
yes.
also?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So there might be some other priors. If I am not the Prabhupada's line in my previous life, so
yeah, that's possible.
Yes. How about the collective karma? Because I'm not the how you say bhakti yogi yet. I don't feel like that. Even I try. Mm-hmm. So is there like a collective karma also there, like my relatives and so on?
Yeah, people with similar karma are often collected together. Yes.
Yes. So it's quite heavy. Computer to carry on.
Yes, quite a big computer.
Yes.
And, you know, Krishna's unlimited, and he can empower his devotees in different ways. As far as collective karma, there's an interesting statement that sometimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it mentions that for the fault of one man, a whole village can be decimated. You know, that's so... Yes, there's collective karma.
Yes, thank you. Because I have difficulties to make a mantra meditation because my computer is so big. And I'm like a figure of speaking. So I just think, I just try to follow at the moment, but it's very difficult, I think.
Try your best and Krishna will help you with the rest.
Thank you.
Nice question. So, one other question before we take... Yeah.
It's not related to the class. May you tell a story about Prabhupada, maybe?
A story about Prabhupada, okay. So, for those of you who are interested in book distribution, here's one of my favorite stories. You distribute books sometimes?
Yeah.
Good, you like to distribute books?
Yeah.
Okay, one year, many years ago, I was in charge of a temple in South America. Caracas, Venezuela, because I lived for years in South America. And we challenged the other biggest book distribution party in the world, which is called the Radha Damodar Party. You heard about Radha Damodar? headed up by Jamal Krishna Maharaj, who was very competitive. Extremely competitive. And it was for the Christmas marathon, and we organized, you know, I and a number of devotees, organized the book distribution in the city of Caracas, Venezuela, and we were able to distribute 35,000 hardbound Bhagavad Gita's in 1 month. That's a lot. And so we defeated the Radha Damodara party, several parts with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was laughing, and he said that Tamal does not like to get defeated, that's one thing. And then I went to see Prabhupada later on in Mayapur to explain to Prabhupada about the preaching that we had done, the book distribution that we had done. And I was sitting in Prabhupada's room, and I explained to Prabhupada that in 1 month we distributed 35,000 of your hardbound Bhagavad Gita's. And Prabhupada's eyes opened wide. And previously, Prabhupada was just going over different management things, like temples being opened and things like that. And he was, you know, just matter of fact, just sitting there. But when he heard about the book, he says, it was almost like, wow. And then I pointed out to Prabhupada that one devotee in our temple, who was with me, had distributed 10,000 of those gitas in that month. That's a lot, isn't it? It's unbelievable. How we did it is, we did it on the buses. The devotee would go onto the bus and he'd hand out a book to each person in the bus, the city buses. And then he'd make an announcement and then he'd go around collecting the money. So that was one box for each bus. And then we had friends all over the city that stocked the books. You know, we kept stock of books everywhere in the city. So he would just get off the bus, grab another box, get on the next bus. And so we're explaining this. And then how this one devotee had distributed 10,000 books, big books in 1 month. And Prabhupada said, he has the mercy of Krishna. And I was feeling quite envious. Because I was the temple president. I was in charge. I was the brains behind the operation. You know, didn't I deserve some credit? You know, all these things were going through my mind. And Prabhupada, here I am, you know. And Prabhupada looked at me, saw it. He understood, you know, being Trikalagya. He understood what I was thinking, and he said, you all have the mercy of Krishna. I breathed a sigh of relief. But then Prabhupada said something, just a, you know, a final zinger, so to speak. He said, but the gopis are considered higher. So in other words, yes, you get the mercy of Krishna, but someone who actually goes out and takes the trouble to distribute books gets special mercy. So I accepted it like that, in a humble way. So that was one story about Prabhupada. Many stories about Prabhupada. As I said, the first time I met Prabhupada in 1971, I recognized him immediately as my spiritual master. And I actually asked him for initiation 2 weeks after meeting him. And the temple president almost killed me for going over his head. He's a really big devotee, the temple president, and he was running after me with a mop, smack me with it, yeah. Anyway, that was the old days.
Because
we
asked directly.
What's that?
You asked Prabhupada directly.
I wrote him, because Prabhupada had left the place by that time. So, in those days, there were no adults in the Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada was the only adult. Everybody else was like 20 or 21 years old. And so, it was an interesting experience. And I did take initiation shortly thereafter, back from Prabhupada. It wasn't long waiting periods like we have now. It's actually Prabhupada, another time, here's another story about initiation, not my initiation, but I was in Dallas, Texas, preparing for the installation of the deities there. And Prabhupada came, and then a whole group of devotees came from another city to see Srila Prabhupada. They asked Prabhupada for initiation. And the temple president said, no, we don't know them. And Prabhupada asked the people, are you chanting 16 rounds? And Prabhupada gave them initiation on the spot. So, it's, you know, very interesting, it's exchanges with Prabhupada. One time Prabhupada told me I shouldn't be happy until every single house, this is in South America, has its books. Should be satisfied until every single house has its books. You know, so anyway, these are different exchanges I had with Prabhupada. He used to cook for Prabhupada along with Shri Tikirti. You heard of Shri Tikirti before. You're from Shri Tikirti, yeah. So in New Vrindavan, I used to help Prabhupada, Shri Tikirti cook for Prabhupada. So I had that blessing too. So, any other questions? I think it's time for prasadam, right? No? Yes?
This is one question that's on my mind. I would like to hear some. Anyway, because Prabhupada did say work now, samadhi later.
Yeah.
And we are, Prabhupada said that work now, samadhi later. We're in the Sankirtan movement.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to hear maybe explanation of how this is related. Because sometimes devotees also, we've heard, not particularly in this room maybe, but sometimes devotees take up, you know, maybe a little bit different process of worshipping, meditating on Krishna's lila and chanting many, many rounds, etc.
Prabhupada said deserve then desire also. And also the verse in the Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavya Brahmanam Brahmanam Brahmatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhanam Brahmakarma Samadhanam. So that means when you're working, absorbed in your work for Krishna, that is samadhi. And this is, all these things will be revealed. Although, previous to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Arsampadaya, there were different processes given for realization. Not just, I mean, it was obviously, he's always chanting the holy name, but there was, you know, Siddha Pranali, for example. And that's not, it's not that those processes were invalid or wrong or anything wrong with that. But we follow our Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in that regard, who both stress the principle of deserve then desire. And Krishna will reveal it. Yasha prasada bhagavad prasada yasha prasada nagati katopi. If one pleases Krishna's representative, then everything will be revealed. And of course, as Krishna says in the Adi Purana, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee, but one who says he is a devotee is my devotee. So the active principle in Krishna consciousness is to follow the Guru's instructions. If the Guru, for all of us, Prabhupada is our Shiksha Guru, at least Shiksha Guru, for some of us like myself, Diksha Guru. But Shiksha is more important than Diksha in any case. So Prabhupada had advocated these other processes for us, then that would be proper. But because Prabhupada didn't advocate it, even though in other branches of the Sampradaya, their guru or their acharya may be advocating those things, and we're not criticizing them for that. But because Prabhupada did not advocate it, it's not going to work for us. That's the same principle as chanting mantras in a way that your spiritual master has given to you. You know, because Prabhupada gave me the Gayatri mantras in such a form, the seven Gayatri mantras, actually, sannyasis chant eight. I won't tell you. What?
Not in this lifetime.
Not in the next 10 lifetimes. So because Prabhupada gave us the Gayatri mantras in this form, that's what I'm going to be chanting. I'm not going to, like we know that the, let's say the Gopal mantra, there's different forms. There's the 10-syllable Gopal mantra, the 16-syllable Gopal mantra. There's the one that Gopal Kumar chanted. But I'm going to chant the way Prabhupada gave me. Because I'm Prabhupada Anuga. And I know I will be successful. That's the faith. If you act according to, faith means to act according to the Acharya's instructions, knowing that you'll accomplish all your goals. So that's all. I mean, don't have to make Krishna consciousness any more complicated. Prabhupada gave it to us. You know, we call this KISS philosophy, keep it simple, sadhu. So just, you know, just do the way Prabhupada, and you know you'll be successful. I have no doubt. So I think everyone's wanting prasadam. I think we have to end, right? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.
His Holiness Pīr Kīrti Goswāmī Maharāj ki
jai. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.